From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's always a pleasure to have my buddy Fred Rosen on. Fred is a crime author. He does work with Investigation Discovery and is currently taping the second season of Evil Kin for them. Fred, how you doing, my friend?
Dana, once again, it's wonderful to be back with you. I'm doing great. How's everything with you?
It's going great. Welcome back to Saskatchewan. I wonder why people... What do people think of the term Saskatchewan? It must scare them a little bit. Yes, no?
I'm going to say that that a certain generation of Americans might have a vague memory of a film by that name.
Yep. Right.
And the other thing I'll say is that, unfortunately, we don't do a very good job of teaching geography to our students.
No, for sure. I don't think that was Nelson Eddy, wasn't it?
Yes. And then Jeanette McDonald and Nelson Eddy. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I don't think I could say.
Who knows? I mean, I think actually there was a film called Saskatchewan with Tyrone Power, but that's not.
that's not what we're here to talk about, but I always enjoy talking to you.
No.
Fred, tell us a little tell us about Evil Kin and Investigation Discovery. Now, when I think of Evil Kin, I think of going to the in-laws for supper, but no, I'm kidding about that. Tell us about Evil Kin.
It's funny you should say that. I had the same experience when I was married. Evil Kin is a really interesting... It started out... My understanding, actually, is that it started out, there's another show called Evil Twins, mm-hmm. Okay? And the idea was that they were going to have twins who were murderers, as far as I know. And to me, it sort of seems like a very limiting concept. But in actuality, there's quite a few cases. Yeah. And then, off of that, they came up with the idea of evil kin, which would be people who are anything from brother and sister to, sister and mother, whatever it might be, who commit some sort of murder. And what's really interesting is they're into the psychological bases of these crimes, and they maintain a very strict journalistic standard in terms of what they do, so what you see is accurate, which is really impressive.
You know, I think what's impressive with shows like yours and others out there is you're capturing or captivating the audience and capturing their interest in these stories, because it's tonight when you and I are talking, Fred, or tomorrow, there's going to be a new one out there about something. Mm-hmm. How do you choose the right one?
Well, that part of it is very interesting. What a great question. I just started, most times people like me, I'm just commenting on the crimes, or I've written a book about it. But I started getting into sourcing, and I began to understand the criteria that is used in order to, at least on this show, in order to, to get something. And it's quite interesting. It's because basically the thing to understand, Dana, is that as opposed to 15 years ago, really, true crime shows, for example, as reality shows, have taken the place of one-hour scripted,
right,
dramatic shows. So you're talking about you know, a fraction of the budget. And so, you know, for these shows. And of course, you're not getting the same kind of audience that you had at one time before the audience fractured as cable came along. But the hard part is trying to maintain some sort of journalistic standard and some sort of a, you know, a through line, in a sense, on all of your cases, like we're talking about, what works, what doesn't work. And, of course, the ultimate answer is the network decides all that, you know.
Right. You know, those things. Fred Rosen's here. He's an author, a friend of the program, and does work with Evil Kin on Investigation Discovery. You know, talking about journalistic integrity, my next guest is a shrink, and he and I are going to talk about Brian Williams and telling the truth.
Are you really?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. We all lie. The statistics that this shrink is going to come up with is... actually, quite staggering, and you got to wonder.
We got to tease it though, Dana.
You got to wonder, why does a guy like Brian Williams or whoever, why do they do it? They've got the world by the tail, you know, and they got to make up a story. You know, we all make up stories, I guess, a little bit, but you know, people have to trust someone, and it's getting harder out there to trust anyone when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Well, of course, that's true, and you know, I was reading a really good piece on this. I think it was in the New York Times, it was an op-ed piece, and it was a really good piece, and it was talking about basically, you know, when you look at something like a, you know, Brian Williams, or you're looking at a successor to, you know, Walter Cronkite. You know, and Huntley and Brinkley and all of these you know, broadcasters that set the standard and suppose, you know, and allegedly, supposedly, whatever, they had journalistic standards. And so now this guy takes over, right? And, you know, one of many. Now, the thing is, I thought a lot about this one. And you want to know something? I think it's a tempest in a teapot. Because you opened it up correctly, which is, first of all, you said everybody lies.
Yep.
Okay. But the thing is, let's just put ourselves in his position. Okay. He's on a you know, a helicopter. He's in a war zone. And the helicopter behind him gets hit. Okay. Now, you know, he knows this. Whatever. So here's the question. When he lands, does he consciously make up a story? Or is he so upset by the whole experience, which is totally plausible, that over a period of time, it all sort of coalesces and he recreates in his mind what really happened?
Yep.
And I'm sort of inclined, quite frankly, to give him the benefit of the doubt, okay? I really am, because, you know, I mean, you know, it's a pretty, you know, and I don't really care about the rest of it, you know? It's like, you know, people look for stuff, you know? I think if you have a trail, that's a different story. You know, if you've got a trail of somebody lying, you know, the funny thing about this, by the way, is that... they suddenly started focusing on Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that got me. That, I think, that was egregious. But he said he covered the Falklands War and he was in a war zone and he was 1,000 miles away. Excuse me? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're reading this and you're going, oh, man. So, you know, it's you know, so, but you know what? If I was going to make any money, you know, bet any money on this situation, I would suspect that NBC is going to cut their losses.
And they might. Yep, they might. Fred Rosen's here, and we're talking about Brian Williams, and we're talking about lots of different stuff. Now let's go. The public has you know, they put somebody on the mantle. They have their person that they can trust, that they can rely on. Well, nobody could rely on somebody more in the 80s than Dr. Huxtable. And Dr. Huxtable is nothing more than a sexual predator now.
Alleged.
I was about to say that. Alleged by 27, 24, whatever it is, victims. Yeah. What about that? All of a sudden, everybody loves Bill Cosby. I go back to the Fat Albert days and before that on record. And when you see this and you see Bill Cosby, 70, however years old he is, and these allegations that are coming out now, Fred, is there anybody out there that we can trust anymore? Is, you know, skeletons in the closet?
Well, you know what? That's a very interesting question, Dan. You know, the thing is, in my generation, maybe it's our generation too, you know, we grew up with certain heroes who didn't have, you know, who were real heroes. I mean, somebody like Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger,
right,
lived that life off the screen deliberately, and he would play the character in real life and make personal appearances, go to hospitals, etc. He was the Lone Ranger. He took it seriously. But you see, when you talk about Bill Cosby, okay, it's amazing. Like, people keep forgetting. They keep talking Dr. Huxtable. Okay, Bill Cosby, of course, came to prominence, as you mentioned earlier, in albums as a comedian. But in terms of his national and international prominence, it was I Spy. So he played a spy,
yep,
with Robert Culp, of course. Now, okay, a spy. What does a spy do? He deceives people. So, you know what? I, you know, personally, I don't buy any of that stuff. You know, like, it's just like when, you know, again, when we were kids, there was a TV show called Father Knows Best.
Yep.
Well, Robert Young played the lead. He later played Marcus Welby, MD, and it turned out the dude was an alcoholic, okay? So, you know, it's like, I think what's more relevant is, how does somebody like that get away with it?
Yep.
And what you see in all of the complaints is a consistent pattern. Using exactly what you mentioned, which is people's trust of him, to allegedly doctor the drinks of women and then rape them. And there is at least one complaint that I know of, by the way, which is within the statute of limitations and is being investigated by the Los Angeles Police Department or the Sheriff's Office, I don't recall which. But if those dudes come back and think they got anything, they're going to charge him. Okay?
Yeah.
They're going to charge the dude. And, you know, so I think what's more relevant is, if it is true, who's complicit? Who allowed this stuff to happen? See, that's to me what's relevant, because you're talking a sexual predator, you know.
Right, and you're right. None of these allegations have been proven. Some go back 20, 30, 40 years. Here's a man in his 70s. I don't know if you saw the video here just the other day, Fred, of Cosby in his pajamas talking on an old rotary phone, something about he'll be back. It was kind of a YouTube quality type of video. You know, you would think the guy would, after all these years in his 70s, with all the stress, would just sit back and say, okay, that's enough. Nobody's proven anything. I'm going to retire. But I guess if he thinks he's done nothing wrong, he's going to keep going. And what about the people, Fred, that love him no matter what?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we always get into, it's a very interesting situation, because we, you know, you have to start, you know, there has to be, it seems to me anyway, a dichotomy between what an individual does professionally and what they do personally. Okay, it doesn't, you know, so in other words, I'm not letting anybody off, okay? I'm simply saying that to judge somebody, you need to, you know, I just feel like there's a dichotomy there between whatever it is that they do, you know, like a celebrity, and, you know, what they might be accused of, okay? So, I mean, just because the guy is accused of being a sexual predator, and I'm not, you know, diminishing that, that doesn't mean, you know, the guy's a multi-Emmy award-winning actor, okay? He's very funny. He's had an indelible role in some people's lives. Okay. And now it seems that he might be an idol with feet of clay. But you want to know something? What else is there?
Yeah.
You know, is there anything else that's new? I mean, isn't this what we do as a civilization? We elevate people and then take them down? Maybe we elevate them too easily.
You know, it's so true. It is so true. The former Bolingbrook Police Sergeant Drew Peterson, who is serving 68 years, Fred, for killing one of his wives, who I've interviewed on my program. I got the most hate mail, but I also had the most listeners for that, is now indicted for trying to hire a hitman to kill the DA who put him away. And when I've been following up that story, this guy is as popular as ever, especially with the women. And why do we idolize the Drew Petersons, the O.J. Simpsons? Well, I don't, but the especially the women out there, and the Charles Mansons included. Why do people love them? Why do people love them? I don't know. I don't get it.
Oh, I think that, you know, there's a large school of thought I've read that women are attracted to quote-unquote bad boys, okay? And I don't agree with that. I think that diminishes women. I think what it really says is that if somebody is attracted to individuals like this, and you mentioned two individuals that we can talk about with a surety are convicted murderers. One is Drew Peterson, and the other is Mr. Madsen. Okay. Let's just assume that with the knowledge that most of us have been given as human beings and whatever our parents have imbued us with, if somebody is really attracted to an individual like that who commits murder or a number of murders, maybe they got some problems, okay, not the least of which is self-esteem, okay? And what that says to me is that there's a lot of people with that problem.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, I wouldn't read anything more into that, you know, except for the fact that when it comes to somebody like Manson, especially, people are incredibly into the psychology of serial killers. There's no question about it. And that's another story. You know, that's another show.
That's another show. Author Fred Rosen's here. Your books, I hear, are coming back out again. Open Road is the company. Tell me about that.
Sure. Open Road is a publishing company. It's the largest publisher of e-books in the United States. And what's happened is that they published A Beacon of Death. These are what we call the backlist, which are older books that I've written. You know, let's say it's 10, 15 years old. And some of them, you know, and so what's happened is they've converted them for the first time onto ebooks. And they sell for less money, which is what I find interesting about it, than they would in paperback. And so Deacon of Death is one of them, Gang Mom, and Needlework is another one, and quite a few of them. And if people can just go to either Open Road and pump my name in, Fred Rosen, or they can go to Amazon and just pump my name, Fred Rosen, and the books will come up.
You know, the work that you've done, writing, television, even coming on my show is certainly commendable, Fred, but there's Fred Rosen, the person, too. Don't you ever sit down and take a break, or are you just not that kind of guy?
Well, that's an interesting question, Dana. Boy, is that an interesting question. I used to, but that was before the recession.
Yeah.
And that was before I got divorced. So I'm not advertising here, but hey, I'm single. And but you know, it was a little bit different. You know, when you're married and have a child, it's one thing, and then all of a sudden you get it's something else.
Yeah. No, you're right. Last question, and it's always a pleasure to have Fred Rosen on the program. He's a down-to-earth kind of guy that I'd like to sit back and just, you know, talk to, and we have fun doing that. But the work that you're doing with Investigation Discovery and being able to sit down preparing, I guess, for, I don't know if you're working tomorrow or not, but sitting down in front of the camera or sitting down in front of the computer and typing what you're thinking, what's the difference? Right. Because when you're preparing for the other one, I think you're just letting her flow, or do you do the same on both?
Great question, as usual. The answer is, in my case, I can't be a talking head. It just doesn't work for me. So what I have to do is, if somebody says to me, okay, Fred, we want you to comment on a case which I haven't been involved in, then I just basically, you know, they'll give me some briefing material, but by that time I've already done my own investigation. So that's basically the answer, you know, which is I have to get into it. Because if I don't get into it and I don't feel it, so that when they interview me on camera, I'm not going to be able to tell the story correctly. And my job when I go on camera is to tell the story in the same way that it's my job to tell the story when I type it. It's basically the same process. You know, where the only thing with TV is probably it's, you know, you got a lot less time, you know.
Yeah. No, I've always wondered that. You know, you and I will sit down, we'll talk for 20, 25 minutes, 3-4 times a year. I'd love to have you on every week, but you're a busy man. Today compared to yesterday and the stories that will come out tomorrow, I know I'll email you in a month or two and I'll say, Fred, you want to come on and talk about the next story? And that next story will be there, and it's always a pleasure and a big treat to have you come on and talk about it, because you're...
Well, it's, Dana, I can't tell you how wonderful it always is to talk to you and to get your perspective. And, you know, I always find that the time goes pretty fast and there isn't enough time to get into the steps, you know.
It does. It does. It goes by fast. And we'll talk some more. We'll talk some more about things real soon. But, Fred, as always, I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Take care, Dana.
Okay, my friend. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Fred Rosen, author of true crime books, and he does a lot of work with Investigation Discovery on a show called Evil Kin. He's a been-there-done-that kind of guy. He's always a good guest and one who speaks his mind for sure. We're going to take a break here on Scared Monkeys Radio and Access 7, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Dr. Dale Archer. Dale Archer is a psychiatrist. He's a contributor to Fox News and Psychology Today, and we're going to continue on with our discussion about Brian Williams, the disgraced NBC News host, Bill Cosby, and a little bit about Jodi Arias. Did she deserve to die? We'll see what Dale Archer has to say. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's always a pleasure to have Dr. Dale Archer on the program. He's a medical doctor, a board-certified psychiatrist, and distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. And when we want to get into people's heads, excuse the pun, we bring Dr. Archer on the program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Dana. Thanks.
Lots of stories to talk about. You and I conversed a few weeks back about Brian Williams. Here we have someone who is a respected news person, obviously. Trust, I guess, is a huge issue. and a story comes back from years ago to haunt him. Let's talk about Brian Williams a little bit and the tendency that we have as human beings to fib, to make ourselves look better, but in this case, it's just spiraling out of control, or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. I think that, you know, we look at a transformation in the news broadcast situation such that 30 years ago, we had Walter Cronkite, and then after him, Dan Rather. And basically, they reported the news. They were trusted sources to report the news. They weren't celebrities, per se. They didn't go on the late-night talk shows and yuck it up with the host. And along the way, there has been a morphing of the news broadcaster into a general celebrity. Now, part of this is our fault, the public's fault, because we get bored very easily, and we don't really want to watch anything that is not keeping our attention.
Right.
And, of course, the ratings shoot up if the person tends to have a little bit more going on. And now with social media, with Facebook and Twitter, personality becomes more important than just reporting the news. And I think, unfortunately for Brian, he got caught up in all of that. And the more he wanted to present himself as a celebrity and as a personality, the more I think he started fudging about who he really was.
Dr. Dale Arch is here. Is it ego? Is it wanting to make myself look better than what I am? Or why do people tell lies? You know, I read the statistics a couple of weeks back from, I think it was your Psychology Today article. It was unbelievable, the people that, you know, how we as a society just can't seem to tell the truth.
No, we really can't. The statistics are staggering. 12% of adults admit to lying very, very frequently. 60% will lie once in a 10-minute conversation. 80% of women will admit to telling half-truths. 31% of Americans lie on their resume. 32% lie to their doctor. I mean, yeah, it's ubiquitous. And I think it's a natural human nature to want to make ourselves look a little better than we really are. And so I think that's understandable. But what we have to understand is that there are certain areas, certain realms where that should not be tolerated. Now, the first thing that jumps to mind is politics. And unfortunately, nothing could be further from the truth, so to speak, because we all feel that our politicians lie incessantly. And I think perhaps the nightly news anchor may be one of the last areas where we choose to listen to your news report because we trust you. And once that trust is lost, in most cases, it can never be regained. So I personally think Brian Williams is done. I don't think he'll ever come back in any way, shape, or form as a news reporter. Now, he may reinvent himself into some other type of media personality, but not reporting the news.
Well, we're hearing stories even as recent as yesterday that when Jay Leno was leaving the Tonight Show, that and Letterman announced that he would be leaving, that Brian Williams came forward and said that he'd be interested. Is it more now personalities reading the news rather than reporters or news people actually saying what the news is, you know, speaking the news? Is it all a personality-based thing? You answered that somewhat, but is that what people are looking for? Like you say, Walter Cronkite, the trust, and you and I are, well, actually, I'm older than you, so I can go back.
I don't know.
I can go back even further with, you know, Huntley and Brinkley and all those guys, but now it just seems like it's personalities rather than true news people. Is that wrong for people to be looking for those kind of guys? What's wrong with the down-to-earth newsman who's just wanting to tell it like it is, I guess?
Because they're boring, boring, boring. And one thing that our Papa Pill culture, immediate gratification society needs is to be entertained. We don't want to watch someone reporting the news anymore. We want to be entertained. And if we're not entertained, we're going to change the channel.
So, obviously, and Brian Williams was well aware of that, and the more he becomes this war correspondent who's been through danger and can tell these stories, that just elevates him in his own eyes, of course, but also in the eyes of the public. He becomes an interesting figure rather than just a boring person reading the news. So it's easy to see how he got waylaid into taking this path, that the more, I guess, interesting he became, the better his ratings became. And so it becomes a very self-fulfilling type of situation where, you know, you get caught up in it, and then how much is enough, and where do you stop, and where do you draw the line? I guess you draw the line in today's world when you get caught.
Yeah, that's well said. Dale Archer is here. And we'll go from telling a lie to make yourself look good to Bill Cosby. Again, trust. Everyone knows Bill Cosby. Everyone loved Bill Cosby. A comedian, you know, a father figure, a doctor, whether it's, you know, no matter what it is. Now we're hearing stories, awful stories, that he may be nothing more than a sexual predator. Again, not so much telling the lies, obviously, he has or they have, but you have 20-some women come forward to talk about this individual. And again, the people's trust in who they have as role models is flushed down the drain, so to speak. What about Bill Cosby?
Yeah, Bill Cosby, boy, what a shocking tale. I mean, you just go back to when he was Dr. Huxtable back in the 80s, and wore that nice comfy sweater and just seemed to be everyone's good old squeaky clean dad that we would trust his advice and love to watch his show and listen to him. And it turns out that there was a dark side to him, so it now appears, that is bordering on the surreal, that this guy, by all accounts, of course he has not been convicted, but by all accounts was indeed a sexual predator, and numerous women are coming out saying that he had sexually assaulted them or had sex with them against their will. And some of them were very young. Barbara Bowman, for example, said that she was 17 years old when this was taking place, and her allegations. Andrea Constan went to police in 2004 and reported that late. I mean, these things go back into the 80s, and they go all the way up into the 2000s, these various reports. So it's stunning to believe, I guess, on a couple of fronts. One, the fact that he was doing it, and two, the fact that he was able to get away with it for oh so long. I mean, that's the other thing that you're just wondering. How in the world could this transpire for so long? And, you know, I mean, it just comes down to, I think, that when you are a sexual abuse victim, as these women were, it's very, very difficult to come forward. Perhaps a little bit easier now, but back in the day, very difficult. No one would believe you. Your character would be assaulted. And, of course, you're going against the great Bill Cosby. What chance would you have? But, yeah, it's staggering.
Yeah, a term we hear quite often, Dr. Archer's re-victimization. What about these victims that are coming forward, like you say, 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, to relive their story? How difficult is that on them?
It's very difficult. And that's why, in this particular case, I look at it and say, wow, where there's this much smoke, there's got to be a lot of fire. Because you're looking at 20-plus women that have come forward and made complaints. And we also know that the average victim will not come forward, would prefer to shove it under the rug and not have people know about it. So if we look at those statistics and run them through our mind, you know, in my mind, that puts us up well close to 100 individuals where this took place, with many of them. You know, many of them now, of course, have families, they have kids, they're perhaps in excellent jobs. They don't want this coming out. No. And they're worried about their life, their career, their marriage, their children. So they stay quiet. So only a handful of the ones that it actually happened to, my prediction here, only a handful would come forward. And even with that handful, which, as we have said, numbers in the 20s, even with that, that's quite a large number and a whole lot of allegations that are out there.
As a society, we all have role models. We have heroes, sports figures, movie stars, you name it. Geez, I almost said politicians, but that'd be wrong. But again, we're talking about Bill Cosby, and you see how difficult it must be for these women to come forward. What about Cosby himself? Man's in his 70s. He really doesn't have anything more to prove as far as his ability as an entertainer and money like you'd never believe, but obviously has been doing something, although yet to be proven, but the allegations are there for quite some time. Does he think that he's done nothing wrong? A true narcissist or a true sexual predator? Or what about the perspective about Bill Cosby? Now he's made some dopey video here yesterday, sitting in his pajamas, talking on an old rotary phone, wanting to come back. It's becoming a sideshow for him. And you got to wonder why his advisors don't tell him just to retire, you know, sit back and relax, and maybe some of this will go away, because it did go away before.
Well, I think that you've hit on the core of anyone who's been in the media spotlight, anyone who's been famous, anyone who's been an entertainer. That's a drug. That's very addicting, and it's very hard to give up. So he's been an entertainer his whole life. And I'm sure in his mind he justifies many of these cases as, oh, it was consensual, and maybe I came on a little strong, but she really wanted it. And so I'm sure he's built up a very, very large, strong wall of defense mechanisms to keep himself safe. And with that in place, he wants to keep on entertaining, because we know that fame is a very powerfully addictive drug, and once you've tasted it, it's very hard not to continue if you can. And clearly, if the reports from the small number of places where he's still performing, he still is very, very entertaining. But I agree with you. I think that it would be time now for him to fade off into the sunset. And gracefully, as gracefully as possible, retire and try to salvage a little bit of peace in the rest of his life. Because I think as long as he continues trying to get out there, there are going to be protests, and the flames are going to continue to be fanned.
Let's counter those that are offended by him, those that are protesting him, to those that think that, well, he's Bill Cosby, he can, you know, it's Cosby, we're going to go see him. What about those? What about those in society that have their heroes, O.J. Simpson, for example, and others who just think that their heroes can do no wrong? Is that wrong for those people to idolize them, or should they be looking for some help?
You know, of course, the classic example in today's world is Jodi Arias, who was convicted of a brutal murder and yet still has a huge contingent of supporters who think she's innocent.
Yeah.
Essentially, she admitted to murdering Travis Alexander. So, yeah, I think that clearly there are two types of people that, in Bill Cosby's case, that would gravitate there. One would have a defense mechanism of their own that's built up and saying, oh, he's being slandered because he's rich and famous and this is a put-up job and they're just trying to get money out of him and he didn't do anything wrong. And then, of course, there's the other group, which is attracted to the perverse nature of these charges, of the dichotomy between Cosby, the clean-cut entertainer, and Cosby, the sexual predator on the side, and this small subset actually embraces that. And so these may be people who had not ever thought of seeing him before, but want to go see him now, want to see this, yeah, this predator in the flesh and see what he's all about and listen to him. And so it's a different world today in terms of the old saying, in terms of being a performer, it doesn't matter what they're saying about you as long as they're talking about you, has never been more true. You can be every bit as famous being infamous as you can being famous.
Well, yeah, people love to see a train wreck. Yeah, you mentioned Jody Arias, so I was going to bring her up. You've been in this business a long time, sir. Have you ever seen a person like her before? She is unbelievable.
She is indeed unbelievable. And no, I have not seen anyone like her before.
Yeah.
Hopefully never see anyone like her again.
Exactly.
You know, it's, I did a series of blogs for Psychology Today on her, and I gotta say, I find her, the psyche of Jody Arias, just absolutely fascinating. And the interesting aspect is that, from all my research and everything I was able to, obtain and all the information, the people I talked to, now I never evaluated her face to face, so I have to put that, caveat in there. But she really didn't meet criteria for any psychiatric diagnosis. So I think there's a common misperception today that anyone who would commit such a heinous crime, must be psychotic or sociopathic or have some psychiatric diagnosis, which we can use to explain why they did what they did. And I went through a whole litany with her. I mean, from sociopath to battered woman to borderline personality disorder, and she just did not meet the criteria. At the end of the day, I was left with the fact that this was a case of love addiction, and she was absolutely addicted to Travis and was going to do anything and everything in order to keep him and make him hers. And once she realized that that was not going to happen, that she was losing him, she made the fateful decision that no one else is going to have him if I can't have him. And that led to murder. And this is a whole picture that we see typically with male abusers. So O.J. Simpson fit this pattern, which is a very possessive, abusive individual, but they're almost always men. And when they're losing their girlfriend, then a lot of times they'll go to great lengths in order to keep her. And of course, murder is way, way out there and not the norm. But you know, Jody really fit the pattern of the abusive male in a relationship, and that's what led to murder. But she didn't have a psychiatric diagnosis. I mean, we can't go there because it just, none of the evidence supports it.
It's interesting. Some have described her as pure evil. But when you come down to the death penalty phase and she was able to escape death, and I don't want this to be a debate on death penalty, but what about those jurors in that position? You know, you can only kill somebody once, a mass murderer, for example. They can only lose their life once. But what about the jury, so to speak, saving her life?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, the jury vote was 11 to 1.
Yeah.
So, and the quote from the jury, the 11 of us strive for justice, but to no avail. We absolutely feel the penalty should have been death. We feel we have failed. This was 11 of the 12 that supported that statement. So you have one juror, we don't know who they are. And, you know, they basically held out and said no, they did not think that she deserves to die. But the interesting aspect is, from the analysis I've been able to do of that jury and in that jury room, and the reports that have come out, this individual basically, from the start of the deliberations, from the very beginning, refused to even look at the death penalty. You know, one of the things that, when you go through the jury selection process, is you have to make a vow that you can keep an open mind and will consider all options on the table.
Right, yeah.
So the question then at that point becomes, well, has she already made up her mind? Or, you know, the counter argument is, well, she made up her mind as the trial went on and decided that that was not appropriate. But I'm sure more will be coming out on that, and it's an interesting dynamic, without a doubt. And there are a large group of people who feel that she's better off with life in prison because she'll have to suffer over a long period of time as opposed to being put to death. That's it's a real debatable topic all the way around. But, you know, Jody and her unbelievable manipulative ability, I think, could well have played a role, and somehow she connected with that one juror and I was able to save her life.
It is unbelievable, and the story is far from over. Dr. Archer, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on, sir.
Thank you, Dana. Always my pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Dale Archer. He is a psychiatrist. You'll read more about him. Psychology Today, his website, drdalearcher.com, is one to check out. He's also on Fox News and all the cable and news programs. Wanted to bring him on to talk a little bit about the what's in the heads of the Brian Williamses and the Bill Cosbys and Jody Ariuses and others, because sometimes it's really hard to figure out what people are thinking. Anyway, I want to thank my guest this evening, author Fred Rosen. He's an author of true crime books and, of course, works with the Investigation Discovery and Discovery Channel. And Dr. Dale Archer, and, of course, you, the listener, because without you, well, we wouldn't have much of a show. I'm Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio and Access Channel 7.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.